The following announcement has been paid for by Journey into Wrestling. Things seem to be changing around here, and I'm talking podcasts, brother.
Journey into Comics Network and no JIW? Where's the wrestling?
That's just it, brah. We're making a comeback. JIW is taking over.
Butt stuff, podcastrophe, the poor rapport, all these new guys on the scene. We're about to show them what podcasting is all about, Chico.
Why don't you tell them when they can hear us, Nate?
Every other Wednesday, right here on the Journey into Wrestling Network.
Anything less is just too civilized.
New World Order.
The following is a Journey into Comics Network production.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Journey into Comics, the podcast about everything nerd, with your hosts, Nate Phillips and Brandon Stone.
Come a long way from the Prime Minister's exploding cake. Or have we?
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to an all-new episode of Journey into Comics. It's episode 154. I'm your host, Nate. As always, joining me today, this podcast player to... Wait, that's the wrong fucking show. We're not doing it that way. But today, with me, as always, Brando, how's it going?
It's going mighty good, my friend. It's been a long night. We've been doing a lot of podcasting lately. Been very, very busy with everything that's going on with the Journey into Comics Network. A lot of shows, a lot of producing, a lot of recording, a lot of editing. I do believe that this coming week will probably be the biggest and busiest podcasting week. Normally for us, it's just a podcasting night. We're really busy for one night. But this whole week, I've got like Monday off. And then the rest of the week is all podcasts.
It's, you know, Brando, we've been just having this progressive expansion where it seems to me that every time we talk, we're saying new stuff about what we're doing with this podcast network, what's going on. The last time we talked, Butt Stuff was about to come out. That's officially been launched into the world. We're literally on our way to get ready to have a bunch of episode twos drop. So it's going to be, you know, your Poor Rapport episode two, the Voice of Survival episode two just dropped. It seems like Podcastrophe episode two is coming soon. Butt Stuff episode two is coming soon. I remember when I was in episode two. 3 months later, .. Pringles.
Yeah, and you took quite the break in between that due to the horrors of snowy weather and the fact that you had to travel an hour and a half to a studio to record because you were recording at your dad's studio at the time.
Yeah, man, but it was okay because as we've said here, it was one of those things I wanted to podcast. I was always thinking about it in that 3 months off. So when it came time to get right back down to it, of course, I jumped in. I'm sure that I probably lost a lot of traction, not just continuously podcasting as soon as I started. But that's okay. This podcast has been something that I started building, and then you helped me build it as big as it is now and what we're doing with these awesome new shows. But, you know, you mentioned that winter was a hindrance on me when I was doing the Journey into Comics episode 2 Pringles 3 months later. And winter is coming, my friend, but winter is also here.
It is indeed. Winter has arrived in the great land of Westeros. And, of course, we're going to be talking about Game of Thrones and that awesome episode 6. Now, it is very interesting because some publications, one in general, and this, I guess I should say that one. That's the only one that I read. Their review and it were then everything, you know, their whole thing, it was rather poor. I think they gave it like a 6.8. And I was like, yeah, they're like, this is the slowest episode of the season. And I have actually said that, you know, there are some things going on this season that just, like, as far as traveling around, just don't really make a whole lot of sense, but they're trying to speed stuff up. And I've always wondered, like, how fast are those damn Ravens that send messages? And
they must be very fast.
Yeah, dude, they're definitely on the ball. But I mean, this, we're gearing up for this week, you know, because we're getting into the season finale already. Seems like we just started with this. You know, you don't want it to end. Normally, the seasons are 10 episodes. This season is only 7, and the next is only 6. We have 7 episodes left, Nate.
Oh, that's so terrible. It's a tragedy, but at the same time, it means that these next episodes are going to definitely be barn burners. I don't think we get anything slow from here on out. Everything that we want to get answers to, we're getting answers to before it's all said and done. You know, I hope that by next year we get to see it. Maybe not. Maybe we have to wait till 2019, but I hope not.
I hope not, too.
Brando, I want to discuss something with you. This episode is heavy in going beyond the wall. This episode is heavy in let's go catch a white. And this episode is heavy in, oh, shit, we done fucked up. Massively, right? So, in all of that, did you, I know you guys had some theories about what happened, but were you satisfied with the way the episode played out, with how they did with that epic scene beyond the wall, with the surprise cameo appearance there at the end of the episode? And I mean, we're not even talking about the main craziness that happened in this episode.
Yeah, I was pretty satisfied. And the thing is that, you know, none of what I said or none of what I, you know, theorized happened would happen. There's only one thing that I theorized, and I don't even think I said it on the show, but I did say it to Blaine, so he can back me up on that. I theorized that Drogon would go to save John and then die in the process. I forgot to say that here last week. So it wasn't Drogon, though. It was Viserion. And
yeah.
Now, I didn't know that he died. What I did know is that the Night King threw a spear at a dragon. And I assumed that something bad was going to happen. But I got spoiled for that because the episode came out early.
Really?
Yeah. I got spoiled by one of my wrestling pages. Now,
that sucks.
Now, I don't know if you remember, but leading up beforehand to SummerSlam, okay, there was talk about what show is going to be better. So this page put up a shot of the Night King being NXT with a spear. And the dragon being SummerSlam. And I was like,
oh, fuck. That's a terrible, terrible way to get spoiled on Game of Thrones.
Yeah, that was like Friday. And I'm just like, dude, you're a wrestling page. Dick.
Cut that shit out. So did you know before we recorded then?
I didn't know 100%. I did say the dragon thing before I saw that, but I was under the impression, as before, that the whole interaction between John and Drogon, I thought Drogon was going to go save him and then potentially die in the process. Now, I did not call what was going on with the dragon until I saw all the dead with the chains, and I just went, fuck. Because I knew exactly what they're doing. Immediately, I'm like, oh, no.
Yep, oh, they're about to play a game of Yu-Gi-Oh.
Yeah.
Blue Eyes White Dragon.
Exact moon, dude. Now, this episode, it was literally like the Westeros Suicide Squad. You had a collection of guys, like a lot of the badasses, Ser Jorah, you know, the Hound. Jon Snow.
Tormund.
Yeah, Tormund. The dude, I can't remember his name now. Beric, right? Is that his name, Beric? He was the dude.
The Lord of Light.
Yeah, he's the guy that's been brought. He's the guy that's been brought back. Now that role was recast after season one, so it's a different actor than from season one. Ned Stark sent him to go take care of the Mountain after the Mountain went rogue. Because the Mountain, I believe, is with the Lannisters, and he was a soldier under Tywin Lannister's forces. And then after the whole thing with the jousting thing, the Mountain went rogue, and he started he had a band of guys with him. Well, Ned Stark says, "Bring him to justice. Bring him before me," because Ned was the basically the King Regent at this time, while the King was hunting or he was whatever he was doing. And I don't know what happened, but if I can surmise, I bet the Mountain fucking killed that guy.
Yeah.
And then he got brought back, and then that started the whole process of that. So, I mean, while he is a badass, he does have multiple lives. But now he's down to his last one because his buddy bit the dust. He got bit by a dead bear.
Yeah, his cleric got fucking ravaged. That was a fucked up... You know, Brando, that was one thing about the episode I want to talk about is they, told you what they were going to do in the start of the episode. Because we haven't seen a white animal, interact and really fuck shit up. And they were like, oh, what's this? These tracks, what's going on? Holy fuck, it's a giant undead bear, son of a dick.
Right.
What are we to do? And I think it was crazy because they came up with the solution. Obviously, fire kills the whites, and we know that dragonglass can kill whites. Beric, though, what the... He's got, a fucking lightsaber. Motherfucker can just set his sword on fire with the Lord of Light. He's just like, wah!
I know.
I'm like, where was that? Why? You guys are freezing. Why didn't you fucking use that sword? What the fuck? Homeboy is freezing to death. What are you doing? Son of a bitch. Oh, man. No, this was a great episode. It was filled with suspense. I think that's one thing that I was really... genuinely happy about was that it was a very suspenseful episode. You didn't know what was going to happen. There was a lot of time waiting. They're waiting, and they've got all these whites surrounding them, and then the Night King and all of his cronies are just staring and watching this group of guys. And part of me was like, oh, they just want to take the white back, the white that they've captured. That's the only reason they're still standing there is because they want to take that white back. No, they were sending a fucking message to Jon Snow. And you know what? Let's talk about that, Brando. There's a rumor online, and I want to get your opinion on this. Bran is the Night King.
You know, I haven't read that yet.
Do you want me to give you some explanation of what they surmise?
Go for it.
Well, it's already been proven that Bran, as the Three-Eyed Raven, can warg into anything living or dead. Okay, so we know he can change the past and have a lasting effect on the future by what happens to Hodor, okay? We also know he can change the past because Ned heard him when he yelled father in season 6, was it, or season 5?
It was 6.
It was towards the end of 6. Right. So we know all these things. We also know that Bran is on a mission to fix the problems and undo what is wrong. So what if he goes back to the time of the Children of Light, right? That's what they're called, or the Children of... How was the Night King created again? I can't remember what those guys are called. The Children of Light?
The Children ended up stabbing him with some sort of object. Was it dragon glass or something?
Right, well, what if Bran was trying to stop him from ever becoming the Night King and got trapped in the past inside of this being, unable to do anything, and he's trying to change it, that happens, and he forgets that he was Bran. That's why when he looks at Jon, he never kills Jon. He has had opportunity. If he killed a dragon, he could kill fucking Jon Snow. Right? But there's somewhere deep down that Bran remembers, and actually it's weird, because the dude's face who's playing the Night King now looks like an older Bran Stark. So I don't know if maybe they caught wind of that as a concept and were like, fuck, that's a great idea. But also an interaction with the ravens, I want to mention, that Bran sent the ravens, and when the Night King looked at them, they scattered, and that's because he's staring into his own timeline and fucked it up. That's why the Ravens freaked out.
I don't know, man. I mean, they just recasted the Night King for season 6. The Night King from season 1 through 5 was played by somebody else. And then they got a guy to play the past version, the guy that becomes the Night King. And they've just taken that guy, and he has they've kind of made him – they've so his looks have changed. He was recasted. I read this article about all the people who have been recasted, and, like, you didn't even notice. And most of them, you do. But then it's like, you know, I forgot entirely that they had recasted Beric, because it's so long ago that you'd seen him by the time he shows up again. And he's so he's in the show so little. Like there are still times where I struggle with, like, oh, yeah, he was that guy.
That was like the guy that was Cersei's love. Is he still alive somewhere, by the way?
Who?
The dude that, not Cersei, fucking that Daenerys, like.
Dario.
Like, Dario, yeah, he got recast.
Yeah, he got recast. The dude that played him only played him for one season. And she left him behind. Because it was suggested that if he were there, he's someone that she really cares about, and he could be used against her by her enemies.
That's right. I do now remember. But, of course, that doesn't matter, Brando. With all the stuff that happens on Game of Thrones, the Night King takes out, what's the dragon, Viserion?
Viserion, however you say his name. It was the dragon that she named after her brother.
Yeah, the one that was yellowish.
Yeah. The golden one, because of the golden
crown. Yeah. So Night King kills it, and, you know, they drag it out of the water. We got a blue eyes white dragon. But I want to talk about the interaction between Daenerys and Jon Snow after she lost Viserion.
Yeah.
And she opens up, you know, and she's like, these are my children, and this, you know, that I'm dying inside. I just lost one of my children or whatever. But she now fully understands that Jon Snow is this unkillable thing. She sees his scar, and everything kind of snaps together. And then she starts holding his hand a little differently than she had been. She starts reacting a little differently towards Jon, and I think it's the comfort of, like, this motherfucker just wants to solve everyone's problems. And he's such a good soul.
They're almost the same person.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
They both want the same thing. And so there's a couple things here. It's how she tells him, I can't have children. It's almost like she's sort of like recognizing and telling him, in a way, there's something here. And I'm letting you know this straight up. I can't have kids. So that's a problem for you. But she doesn't say that.
No.
You know, because it's so obvious that there is such a connection. And they, you know, I so far I haven't heard anyone say that they're shoehorning this in. They are really, this is happening really fast. But these are two characters who have never interacted with each other, who get introduced to each other, and who are really... They both had their long paths to power. You know, to her, it's her destiny. To him, it's something that he's never asked or wanted.
It's like his duty.
Well, his duty. You know, at one point he did want to lead. You know, he told Commander Mormont, "Yes, I do want to lead." And then it got to a point. All of his experience beyond the wall changed him. And then this whole thing, it's like he's always been trying to do what's good, best for everybody. And that has always kind of led him to putting himself before others. And he is so selfless in that way. With her seeing him willing to die just to get them away, he's gonna stay behind. You know, when she's standing up there looking out, at first you think, well, she's mourning the loss of her dragon, and she doesn't want to leave yet. I feel like she's waiting for him to show up.
Because absolutely.
She's already dealing with the fact that she lost her dragon. Now she's like, this guy just risked himself for me and for us and for everything. And just so that way, you know, here he is throwing, he's throwing his life away again. And then he did. And of course she's like, you know, she thinks that he's dead, but there's always that, there's that hope, you know? And then, so yeah. And of course, right, as soon as she's getting ready to walk away, Ryder at the wall or at the gates. And he,
yeah, Brando.
And unlike Khal Drogo, you know, he didn't fall off his horse. He just passed out on him. And yeah. And the horse rode in. And yeah, dude, the whole scene, very well acted between the two characters, because they have to convey that this is happening very fast for them. And it's uncomfortable. It is unknown. It is dangerous. It's like all these feelings. But I absolutely love their interaction, because then it's like, you know, she sees him differently, and now he sees her differently.
Absolutely.
And then when he says, well, he calls her Danny. And then she's like, I don't know, my brother called me that. That's not necessarily the most comforting thing that I've ever heard. And, you know, he kind of was a dick to me. And then he says, all right, then how about my queen? And I was like, wait. And then you see it, you know, she did such a good job in conveying the emotion. It's almost like she wanted to start crying.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then he's, you know, she even says, what about your people? You know, because she's already arrived at the point. She saw the Night King. She lost her child, her dragon, to this. So she's already on board. She wants to kill this motherfucker. She doesn't give a shit if John's going to kneel or not at this point. I'm with you. Let's go kill this motherfucker. We'll sort this whole thing out later. But I'm with you. Let's go. She's already arrived there. Meanwhile, John has arrived to a point of, I'm fucking done, man. You know, you actually want to lead. You actually want to do this shit. We're the same person. I'm behind you. And then, you know, when she says, I hope I, you know, she says, what about your people? And he goes, they'll come to see you as I have, you know? And she goes, I hope I deserve it. That was such a great scene. But when he said my queen, I was like waiting and on the edge of my seat. He's like, is she going to say my king? No, she didn't. But one thing. I'm sorry, Nate, you go ahead. I've talked for like the last 4 minutes.
Oh, no, it's okay. All I was going to say, Brando, is just that to me, it's really interesting, because Danny is destined to lead. John has been almost forced to lead. She thinks it's a birthright. He has almost felt like leading as a burden. But if he knew who he is, if that makes any goddamn sense, it would be a totally different play. We would have a totally different... Could you imagine Jon Snow as a Targaryen that had never been separated from the Targaryens and lived?
Well,
he would have been a cunt.
Yeah. Well, you know, well said. But because he was raised by Ned Stark, he is almost like the reincarnation of Ned in a lot of ways.
Correct.
So, you know, that's very, you know, that's very cool and how they balance that dynamic, because you lose Ned in the beginning of season one and you're like shaking your fist. Like, he was the, you know, he was the lawful good in this world. And then you just think, oh, well, John's up by the wall. He can't do shit. But over the course of the series, John ends up leaving and he ends up becoming that role. And he hopes to become half the man that his father was. And, you know, while by blood, he most certainly is a Targaryen at this point. Ned raised him. Ned is his father, you know. It doesn't really matter who Rhaegar is. Rhaegar's dead. But there was something else I was going to say for this.
Were you going to talk about what your predictions for the finale are?
Not yet, no.
Okay.
No, not yet, because I wanted to speak on the Hound. Notice that the Hound left Beric and Tormund and all those guys, and he is with Jon, Daenerys, you know, Ser Davos, Tyrion wasn't there. Tyrion wasn't on the boat, but he's there with them, and they're traveling to King's Landing. So he's going to have a reunion with the Lannisters. And of course he abandoned his post as guard to Joffrey. Well, there's a new big guard in town, isn't there?
Yeah, there is. He hasn't even seen his undead brother yet.
No, he hasn't. And then I feel like that's going to be a chapter that kind of comes to close. Maybe in the next episode. I don't know.
Do you think that Sandor is going to kill Gregor?
I hope so.
That would be super poetic if the Hound took out the Mountain. Considering that story is that the Hound got the shit kicked out of him by the Mountain frequently, right?
Yeah, well, you know, like, as children, he burned him.
Yeah, he burned. You know? That's where he got the scar.
Yeah, and then, yeah, throughout life, the Mountain was the bully. But you only see them cross swords once, and that's in season one, when the Mountain gets all upset because the Rose Knight, the I can't remember his name, the Tyrell boy. You know what I'm talking about, Marjorie's brother.
Yeah, Marjorie's brother, whose name starts with an R, I think, but I can't remember.
Maybe I can't remember it right now. But yeah, he beat him in that jousting event, and the Mountain got all mad, and he like decapitated his horse in one swing.
I'm gonna look up who the Tyrell is.
But yeah, so that's like, you know, the Hound goes down there and he ends up like telling him to stand down, and he ends up crossing swords with him, and then King Robert calls an end to it.
Okay, I'm looking it up now, Brando.
Yeah, I can't.
Renly, it was Renly. Renly Baratheon was her widow.
Yeah, and then they were lovers. Renly and the brother were lovers.
Loras. Sir Loras. Who's Finn Jones, who played Iron Fist.
Yes.
Yeah. He had a fucked up fate. All the Tyrells had a fucked up fate, actually. That's their story. Systematic elimination of houses has to really start happening if the Game of Thrones is to conclude.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's sort of history, you know. You have big families that rise up to power and families that end up, you know, getting erased. And that's one reason, like, that's one reason why Tywin ordered the execution of all the Targaryens. Now, there is, in the books, one surviving son of Rhaegar Targaryen besides Jon.
Really?
And, yes, and I don't right off the bat remember his name. He was protected and swapped with a peasant boy by Lord Varys. Lord Varys was a loyal servant to the Targaryens. He protected an heir to the throne. And then at some point they went off, and now he's doing like his own thing on the high seas or something. But
that's awesome.
Then when Daenerys kind of comes back around, Varys' loyalty kind of shifts. And it's, in fact, there's a theory that the surviving son of Rhaegar that Varys ended up protecting now is some sort of imposter. I don't know. There's like, the books are like so massively different now from the show. There's so many characters who are alive in the books that are completely dead in the show.
Yeah, and, like, they didn't use Lady Stoneheart to show Mountain undead. That was a change, right? Because there's no undead Mountain in the books. Brando?
Uh-oh. Yeah, you cut out pretty bad there, buddy.
Oh, no. Well, we should switch. I don't know. Should we switch up? Or off a video to try to audio this out?
Yeah, maybe. We'll turn it off and see. See if it helps out.
All right.
But
all right. How do I sound now?
Good so far.
Cool, guys. Well, we're sorry about that technical difficulty, but we're going to move on in the episode here. Brando, I want to talk about the letter. We need to talk about this letter. And I'm talking about the letter Arya brings to Sansa that Sansa sent away in the first season of Game of Thrones. There was only one in Winterfell. Littlefinger had a hold of it. What do you think?
That Littlefinger's trying to drive a wedge between the two sisters to the point of where if all the other lords turn against Sansa, then she's going to have to turn to Littlefinger, even though she doesn't want to.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. My thing was, it was crazy because I was like, what the fuck is this letter? I couldn't remember, you know? And then in the preview of the episode when they give you the what has happened previously on Game of Thrones, it flashed back to season one and I was like, holy shit, that was that letter. And it all came together to me, and it was weird because Arya has a really good point. If the Lords of the North and that little lord, I can't remember her name, the little badass.
Lady Mormont.
Yeah.
Her name is Lyanna Mormont.
Lyanna Mormont, if she finds out that you essentially betrayed your king, what do you think she's going to do? Do you think she's going to be fucking cool? And Arya essentially scared the fuck out of Sansa, but it is absolutely playing into Littlefinger's hands.
Yep.
Yeah, man, I don't know. That story is going to wrap up pretty dark, too, I think. I don't think there's a happy ending for somebody.
Nope.
What if Arya ends up on the throne as Sansa forever?
That'd be messed up.
Right? Just like, oh, well, I had to kill my sister, but I can't tell anybody that I killed my sister, so I'll just become my sister. She just did tell her how she can become the man of men, or, you know, become a faceless man.
Yeah.
All I have to do is kill him.
Yeah, that was a tense scene.
Very tense. Whole episode was fucking tense.
And the thing is that as a viewer, you've been kind of detesting how Sansa's been acting and don't really trust Sansa, but then when Arya starts talking like that, she definitely comes off like a villain.
Very threatening.
Oh yeah.
How dare you? How dare you sell our fucking house out, man? It was not cool. And that's so crazy because, you know, what Sansa is saying is true in some regards. They did kind of force her hand to send that letter. But really, some of that stuff, I don't think maybe she had to say. I don't know. That's a weird thing to think about retrospectively, what she should have done and things that she can't undo. You know, everything's moving forward here, Brando, so let's talk about it. We didn't really get any Sam this episode.
None. Absolutely. None.
We also didn't get any of the Lannisters this episode.
Nope.
I'm trying to think what else. Oh, we haven't seen any of the fucking Ironborn and the Greyjoys since forever. I think the last Greyjoy we saw was Theon with his reunion with Jon.
Yeah, and I want to say that maybe that was just in the preview that I saw that Theon was back on the sea or something like that, but...
Well, I mean, I don't know, Brando, but my question is, man, seriously, where the fuck do we go from here with Game of Thrones? I think that your series finale is always not what you're expecting for Thrones. I know that a lot of times the penultimate episode's the epic death episode, as they call it. We did definitely get that in this penultimate episode of this season. There were some crazy things that happened. But what could you even do in this season finale that's going to top what you just did?
Dude.
Unite the kingdom?
Yeah, do the unexpected. Do the absolute unexpected where nobody dies?
Yeah, everybody bands together. Cersei's like, oh, fuck, well, I guess you guys aren't bullshitting me. I think we should go fuck these dudes up. Oh, they killed your dragon? They gotta be serious if they killed your dragon. We couldn't even kill your fucking dragon. and one dude javelin the fucking dragon from a million feet away. Like, that motherfucker's got some next level aim. Maybe he's an X-Man or something. You know? But seriously, Brando, what could you predict even with the teaser for next week's episode? I don't know that I had any inkling of an idea of what they're going to do tomorrow night, which is last night if you're listening to this on Monday because you're not a patron.
Yeah, dude. This is us sort of looking at what has already happened by the time you're hearing this. But, man, I don't know. Like, if I were writing this and I wanted to be completely unpredictable and really, really gut the fans. Shit. Would you kill Daenerys?
Oh. Brutal. What? This far in, you all of a sudden kill your dragon queen? Mm-hmm. Right after you give her the love tease with Jon Snow?
Yeah.
They would be damned forever. They would become the most hated show in history.
Most definitely, yeah.
Most definitely. You don't even argue that. That's awesome. You just absolutely agree with that. No, man, I'm telling you. I think that would be a fucking ballsy move on their part.
I don't think that they're going to do it, but that would be like, well, because then what do all these people do that have like rallied around her do?
Well, they freak the fuck out, but then do they band behind Jon Snow or?
And then he's already lost. And then if they band behind him, that means he's lost the North. Because if he finds out, because they're already kind of turning against him anyway.
Yeah, the Northern folk.
So the king of the North is actually the rightful king.
That'd be a way to take him and give him the throne. Because he would become righteous fucking rage if Cersei took out Daenerys.
Oh, yes.
He would, look, Jon Snow has put up with bullshit this entire series. That's the straw that just breaks the fucking camel's back. I don't know, man. It's crazy because I feel like we're going to have to maybe talk before Friday, but I don't know if we're going to be able to. And I feel like this is like going to be 3 weeks in a row, but like Journey into Conics heavily featuring Game of Thrones. I don't give a fuck because it's awesome.
Oh, well, when you're getting this far in, you know, like, I mean, we're definitely going to cover it. I mean, come on.
Oh, man, you got to. It's too great of a show. And to think there was a point in time where Journey into Comics wasn't covering the show because you didn't watch, I didn't watch, and then it was just my stupid ass that didn't watch for a bit. But I'm caught up now and I'm so, so grateful because it's like an amazing fucking show. I really want to see some cool shit, Brando. You know, in the teaser, you saw all the soldiers are at King's Landing, all of Daenerys' soldiers, it seemed, or at least a large chunk. I feel like Cersei's gonna have to fucking back down. I don't think this comes to a head and starts to fight. I think that is the most unexpected thing, is for it not to end violently.
Right. I mean, it's gonna be interesting, and it makes you wonder if they're going to do. You know, I heard a theory about Cersei calling for an end to this situation. You know, not on the battlefield, but in a trial by combat.
Ooh. Jon Snow v. Jaime?
Mountain versus the Hound.
Oh, shit. That would be fucked up, dude. Considering the last time the Hound was in a trial by combat, he pretty much died and still lived.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
And Brienne of Tarth is going to be there.
Ooh, dude. Oh, shit. Is Tormund with him? Tormund's with him. Or did he stay behind at Eastwatch?
I think he stayed behind at Eastwatch.
That's right, because that's where he is stationed now. Man, we're gearing up. Last night was the greatest episode ever. I don't know. That's just a prediction that I future tripped. But I hope it's an amazing episode. I'm really looking forward to it, Brando.
79 minutes.
So it's an extended feature. I'm excited. We're going to be having Margarita!
Do you know the name of the episode?
I do not.
I want to say it's called The Dragon and the Wolf.
The Dragon and the Wolf?
Yeah.
Well, that would be Jon and Daenerys.
Mm-hmm.
Well, shit. I'm fucking stoked. God damn it, get here tomorrow.
Hell yeah,
yesterday.
Man. Yeah, get here yesterday.
Or whenever you're listening to this. It's so weird. We're time travelers. I always talk about this on the show, but we are time travelers because sometimes when you're listening, like today, I listened to an episode over 2 years old of Journey into Comics.
You know, Captain, so did I.
What did you listen to?
I started listening to Ghost Hunt.
Oh, that's a teaser for some extra content coming down the pipe.
Yeah,
possibly.
I just got distracted by Facebook. I opened it up real quick to look at something. And somebody, Jake Surd, he posted, "Holy shit, boxing is boring." By the way, Nate,
yeah.
the fight's over.
I saw. I think it was an early stoppage, but that's all I'll say. But hey, an MMA fighter who's not ever been in a boxing ring lasted 10 rounds with the greatest boxer of all time. What does that tell you about mixed martial artists?
Mm-hmm.
They're bad as fuck. They're the real motherfucking deal, man. And that's why I have so much respect for UFC and anything MMA related. Brando, I will say that 10%. So we should probably start moving into some other topics.
Yeah.
While I love Game of Thrones and could sit here all day and revel in all the possibilities, there's some other things I want to touch on. Some quick fire news, and then I want to close out this episode with some Walking Dead. We've not touched it in a while. There's a lot to digest. We'll you know, make sure we can. But I want to get your rapid reaction. We just got news that there are some Joker sightings. And by Joker sightings, Brenda, what I'm saying is there were two movies announced that have nothing to do with each other. One of them could, I mean, literally, Brando, we're talking a possible Oscar award-winning movie. And the other could be a pile of dog shit. I don't know. Suicide Squad didn't give me enough Jared Leto Joker to get an actual opinion of what I think of him as the fucking Joker. So it was announced Suicide Squad 2 happening. Joker's a part of it. He's going to be a part of Gotham City Sirens, which is a side story. He's also going to be a part of the Harley Quinn movie that they're going to do with him and her. But then it was also announced Martin Scorsese of The Departed fame and a bunch of Wolf of Wall Street, obviously. Martin Scorsese is directing a Joker origin, and I gotta know, man, what the fuck do you think about that?
It doesn't make any damn sense. Like, that is just Martin Scorsese and the Joker. It sounds like two things that should not be said in the same sentence.
Well, Brando, I'm gonna blow your mind, because as soon as I heard this, it's actually funny, because we have a weird disagreement here. I think this is genius. Martin Scorsese writing and directing a Joker-themed movie, he's going to take it from a mob presence. And if you take the Joker and turn him into an epic mob boss and give him a fucked-up story, Martin Scorsese will write one of the greatest pieces of cinematic history. I guarantee it, because he's going to have the ability to take a character that no one fucks with. No one. And they're not going to tell him no. He's fucking Martin Scorsese, goddammit. He's won Oscars. Lots of Oscars. He's won all kinds of awards. Like, he's been in film for like 50 fucking years. Literally his first film was in 1967. Okay? 50 fucking years he's been at it. He's a legend of the game. If he said, I want to do a Joker movie, and they said, sure, yeah, we'll make that happen, I guarantee you it's going to be a dope mob classic. He's going to cast somebody that's going to be right. It's going to be a piece that he's telling his best story with, and I cannot be more excited. Hopefully I've swayed you a little bit on your opinion.
Well, no, I wasn't saying that it's going to be bad. I'm just saying that, like, I was saying that that's something that you would not put together.
Oh, I got you. Something you don't expect. I just ranted to sell you on something you were probably still sold on anyways.
But I get the gangster point, you know, and it, to me that sort of shoehorns it into a certain, you know, the character into a certain wavelength of design. And we know that the Joker is, he can be that, he is that, and he's also so many other things as well. And how you said how they're not going to tell him no. And I think that's why, I think that is why that, that Leto is not involved with this, is because they want this movie to stand on its own outside of the DCEU. And so therefore, like, if they can, they can say, well, this is the origin of the Joker, and it could be the one that we have over here, but if you don't want it to be, it doesn't have to be.
You know, and Brando, there's one interesting thing to counter that, to say the same thing you just said, but maybe a little bit differently. To me, and I want you to follow me on this one, to me, DC is starting to maybe set the precedent that just make whatever fucking movie you want. It doesn't matter if we think it's going to be directly tied to the DCEU or not. Because I think somewhere down the road, they're going to literally do the DCEU open up as a multiverse and be able to play with anybody. Mm-hmm. And consistently reinvent themselves. And maybe, don't quote me here, folks, and I'm not fucking jumping off Marvel's bandwagon. I've been sucking that donkey dick for a long time. I really like Marvel, okay? But what I'm trying to say is, maybe DC has something here that is unique enough that they can do, like I've always said, with including the CW shows. They can say, it doesn't matter if that Scorsese's Joker, because now all of a sudden, the stories we want to tell are with that Joker, and now our Batman's maybe not Ben Affleck, because, well, that's not the universe that we were telling a story in. We were telling it in this universe. Oops. Earth 17, my bad. That's yes. Affleck.
Scorsese-verse, the Miller-verse, the...
The Snyder-verse.
Snyder-verse, yeah.
I mean, the Nolan-verse. See, you can tie it back however far back you fucking want. That's the crazy thing. They've already proven they're willing to do that with the comics, having, like, the 66 Batman comic continue on, doing the 89 Batman comic and continuing that on. I mean, I don't know. I don't quote me, folks. I don't know what DC has planned. But maybe, just maybe, this is something they can do, because now, Brandon, you know, they're at the point now where their comics are telling really creative stories. They just did the Button story. And, you know, with that being said, it's like, shit, man, you could almost do another Watchmen movie where not Zack Snyder directs and we get a different take on the Watchmen. Not to say that Zack Snyder's Watchmen is at all bad. I absolutely love and adore that movie. But that then allows you to use fresh, new, young actors to then include in your DCEU Button story that would break the bank. Watchmen, Batman, Flash in the same place. It wins. Take my money. And then you could build to Doomsday Clock and add Superman to that story? Fuck. Hell yeah. Take all my cash.
Hell yeah, man.
Brando, speaking on DC, I was just looking through my notes. Speaking on DC, is it fucked up that James Cameron thinks that Wonder Woman is a step backwards in the moving forward of women's rights in movies?
It's just interesting. you know, everybody's, you know, it's just like everybody's got an opinion nowadays. You can't just let a, you can't let a good movie be a good movie and let it be something that does something good. You know, you've got to chime in and just sort of like try to snuff it out. You know, I've heard nothing but great things about Wonder Woman. Unfortunately, I haven't watched it. I didn't get a chance to go to the theater and see it. As soon as it comes out, I do want to watch it. But I've heard nothing but good things. And then here comes, you know, James Cameron, one of the highest earning directors of all time. And, you know, he's very well accoladed. I mean, look at the films that he has under his belt. He knows what it means to make movies. His opinion carries weight, but I don't know. Like, without seeing the movie, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that James Cameron is wrong. I can't do that. But I just think it's like, man, do we really need to be having, like, just why start an argument? Like, how is it a step back? And I guess I don't understand his argument.
He said,
because I read it and I just sort of got lost in the circle of what he was saying.
Yeah, he literally just spoke total bullshit, to quote him. During the interview with The Guardian, James Cameron was asked about the wildly successful Wonder Woman. His response was, "All of the self-congratulatory backpatting Hollywood's been doing over Wonder Woman has been so misguided. She's an objectified icon, and it's just male Hollywood doing the same." The article froze. What the fuck, internet world? I was mid-sentence, and it, like, glitched out. What the fuck? Brandon, do you have that quote right there? Oh, it's a fucking advertisement. Fuck you, advertisements. Back to what I was saying. He said, it's just the male Hollywood doing the same old thing. But I'm not saying I didn't like the movie, but to me, it's a step backwards. Sarah Connor was not a beauty icon. She was strong. She was troubled. She was a terrible mother. And she earned the respect of the audience through pure grit. And to me, the benefit of a character like Sarah is so obvious. I mean, half the audience is female. So he kind of just talks shit, but Patty Jenkins came back at him hardcore here. She said, James Cameron's inability to understand what Wonder Woman is or stands for to women all over the world is unsurprising, as though he is a great filmmaker, he is not a woman. Strong women are great. His praise of my film Monster and our portrayal of strong yet damaging women was so appreciated. But if women have to always be hard, tough, and troubled to be strong, and we aren't free to be multidimensional or celebrate an icon of women everywhere because she is attractive and loving, then we haven't come very far, have we? I believe women can and should be everything, not everything, just like male lead characters should be. There is no right and wrong kind of powerful woman, and the massive female audience who made the film a hit, it is, can surely choose and judge their own icons of progress. Shit, drops the mic.
Well.
Well! yeah, man, I think it's crazy that James Cameron would say some shit. He seems to always be getting his ass in trouble talking shit he probably shouldn't. I get it, you're a glorified director, you're a celebrated director. You've probably made, like, really, what, like, 3 movies all time or some shit? The number's low, right? He hasn't made a fuck ton of movies because it takes him so long to make one. I mean, the first Avatar was, like, a 12-year process or some shit, right?
Yeah, dude, it took him forever. Like, it was, like, Titanic and then Avatar. I mean, he made what? He made The Terminator. He made Aliens, The Abyss, Terminator 2, True Lies. Then Titanic, there might have been one in between there, but I'm not thinking of it. But every single movie that he's made has made some pretty good money. Like The Terminator, that was a $6 million budget, and then he ended up making like 85 on that.
Shit. Man, that's crazy, Brando. Anyways, that's a little bit of DC news. I know that Avengers Infinity War Part 2 or Infinity Gauntlet Part 7 or whatever the fuck they're calling it, Avengers 4, as it were, has started production. They're filming. And we know that Pepper Potts is in the movie, which means she is returning. There's some stuff about her having a wedding ring on her finger that's pretty interesting. But anyways, that's just the only real Marvel news. There's nothing really a lot to cover yet. I think I want to do a breakdown special next week and really dive into some of our thoughts on what's going to happen in Infinity War. We're getting closer to that. But right now, Brando, how about we break down some Walking Dead?
It's been a few months. We did not look at 169 or 170. So now is our chance to do that. I read both the other day. I really enjoyed it. We're still in the aftermath of the Whisperer War. Still, two issues here, Nate. No sign of Beta.
I found him.
Did you?
Yeah, huh. Cover of 173.
Oh, okay.
That, not to spoil the cover of 173, I don't know that it's Beta. But there's a shadowy figure attacking Jesus. And I believe it might be Beta. That's my hope anyways.
Right on. Well, we definitely get some clue that Dwight is not happy at all with what has transpired between you know, everything with Rick and then Sherry. And Dwight says quite plainly, your time is up. I'm taking over.
Yep. And he does not trust Rick Grimes anymore. I loved the interaction with Dwight, and I fucking, of course, it always seems that I forget one character's name, but she was like the punker savior chick that was with Dwight, and, you know, he says that he compares Negan to Rick.
Yeah.
And says, these men are no different. And she goes, you don't really believe that, do you? Like, are you sure that's what you want to say right here? But it seems like by Dwight's actions that, yes, this is exactly what he wants to say. He does not trust Rick Grimes, and there's trouble a-brewing.
Yeah, and then on the other side of that, we have the revelation. Rick finally got told about the radio.
Oh, yeah. Siddick found the radio during the end of the Whisperer War and the attack on Alexandria. And in finding that, you know, he talked to Stephanie on the radio for a minute, and it was no real surprise that Siddick was going to rat out Eugene and say that he had this radio. And I think Rick was pretty like, he set it up very nicely. He was very, very accommodating to Stephanie's group in Ohio. He says, look, you name the location. Doesn't have to be where you guys are. Doesn't even have to be close if you don't want. We'll go to you. If it doesn't check out, whatever, it's fine. Kill us on site. It's cool. But we should open up a line of communication because we need your help and you're going to need our help. We're trying to rebuild this world.
Yeah, you know, he says that they'll meet on neutral ground, far enough away where they won't be able to find their camp or their home. And he pretty much laid on the Rick Grimes charm, saying, hey, yo, yeah, you're out there, we're out here, we have safe travel in between our communities, we can make that happen, even all the way out through Ohio. This is part of it. This is us rebuilding everything. And they sort of go for it. Now, another confrontation, a quick one, happened even before the radio revelation for Rick, and that was what we've kind of all been waiting for, and that was the one-on-one discussion between Maggie and Rick and concerning one person.
Negan.
Yeah. It's funny because, she is pretty much saying exactly, word for word, exactly what I would predict that she would say.
Like, what the fuck, Rick? How is that monster gonna just be walking around? He fucking bashed Glenn's head in with a baseball bat in front of her. In fucking front of her.
Yeah.
Like, there is no forgiving that. It's an unforgivable thing. However, and maybe I'm in an unpopular place here, I side with Rick's decision here. I think it's better to keep Negan alive. He's a very strong ally. He trusts Rick Grimes. And in this world, Brandon, I'm telling you, the number of people that trust Rick Grimes is shrinking by the issue.
It is. It is. And of course, we did get to see them sending Negan off in very unceremonious fashion. Pretty much exactly kind of how Rick said it was going to go. He's like, you're going to leave. You're going to go. We're going to give you a gun. And that's going to be it. And then, Negan's like, fine. Yo, whatever. Fuck you guys anyway. And then he's like, I'm going to go where I buried her first. And then Maggie has... with Dante, I do believe. Talem, see where he goes. I'm not losing track of that bastard. She does not approve of Rick's decision at all to have a wild Negan out there, But and then Rick's like, what am I supposed to do? Killing him isn't right. He's like, and what's funny is that you have Dwight saying that Rick and Negan are no different. And in defending Negan, Rick is saying, we're not that different. Think of all the husbands and wives I've killed.
It's paralleling. It's really bizarre. And Brandon, I'm gonna run a crazy thought by you as I was reading these issues. We're gearing towards something different. We're gearing towards The Walking Dead maybe making a big shift in everything they do. I feel like, not that it's stagnated, they've done a really great job of keeping the suspense and the mystery and being able to tell a really smart, fluid story and being able to kind of channel that and push a lot of ideas together. But I think there's going to be a shift here soon where Negan is going to be the trustworthy one and Rick Grimes is not going to be.
It's going to be interesting to see how that works, because we were wondering what Negan's play was. Think back to all those episodes ago when we talked about it. What's his play? What's he doing? And when's he going to turn on Rick? When's he going to do this? And that's the thing, is that he never did. And not what he was even planning at all.
And it's crazy because now you don't even question Negan's loyalty to Rick. I don't even question it at all.
Well, I mean, he's made it so outspoken. And he's done everything to try and prove it, even by taking out Alpha. It's like, I gave you her head on a silver fucking platter. What else do I got to do? And there's Rick going, all the shit you fucking done. And Negan's like, fuck, I know, man. All the shit I fucking done. You think you need to tell me all the shit that I fucking done? He's like, I deserve to be fucking dead now. You won. You had every right to kill me after everything that I've done, but you didn't. You've kept me alive, and what's it going to be? He goes, I don't want to rot in that cell anymore. I don't. But I also don't want to kill you.
And I don't want things to be the way they were.
Exactly. He's changed his thinking. Everything's different. Him losing to Rick and then spending all that time in that cell gave him so much to think about.
And Negan had really interesting dialogue this issue, talking about 170 more specifically. Granted, there was the big step up in 169 where Negan monologued and fucking went off on the Saviors. That was so badass. Like, hey, get your shit together. Oh, no, that was 168.
Yes. That was the issue.
169 was everything leading up to the group's departure. Carl is going to the hilltop. And
yeah.
He says, I can't be in fucking Alexandria. It is far too sad. And I can't live my life in sad. I have to become who I'm supposed to become. There's a great retrospective flashback. And actually, if you have our Patreon, our first exclusive comic club coming up, we're going to be talking about the first six issues of The Walking Dead. And they talk about Billy and Ben, the twins.
Yeah, you know, Carl looks back into where, you know, you had the incident with the twins and then the murder. And then they were thinking about killing them and Andrew wouldn't have it. And then Carl went ahead and did it. And then no one ever really knew. He told his dad, but eventually he told Andrea. And we get the origin of how Carl started calling her mom.
10 times more fucking heartbreaking now that you know this story.
Mm-hmm. Oh, dude, it is, because Carl tells Sophia, I do believe. I don't know. Was it Sophia?
Yeah, it's Sophia. It's Carol. Oh no. You're talking about
No, it's the other girl.
Lydia.
Yeah, Lydia. Wow, I just that was a big fail. So yeah, because I was like, as I was reading, I was like, oh, he's talking to Sophia, and then as I thought about it, I was like, she was there. He doesn't need to tell that story again.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, okay, so yeah, so he tells a story about how he killed the kid and thought that it would be better if a kid killed another kid and an adult wouldn't have to, like, burden themselves with that, right? So when he told Andrea, you know, she obviously was very upset. But then she hugged him and said, I love you. And he thinks back to when Rick told him, he's like, parents always love their kids. They can be sad. They can be disappointed in them. You know, they can be upset with them. They can not like who they are in that moment. But they'll always love them. And then he goes, that from that moment on, I called her mom. Because she showed me that even after what I did, she still accepts me. She still loves me.
Yeah, man, it was really, it was like, fuck. Because, you know, they did a really good job. You get the time jump, and the next thing you know, fucking Carl's calling Andrea mom, and you don't know why.
Yeah.
And that was fucking 40-some issues ago. Like 42 or 43 issues ago that we've been living with this reality that Carl calls Andrea mom. That's like a third of the series. That's fucked up, dude. I mean, to think about, like, Lori, and she's the first 50, it's... The parallel is very bizarre. You know, Carl has had a very interesting growth in this book. I'm really excited to see where things go from there. I think he's going to become a very strong leader at the hilltop, but I think he's also going to create friction for Maggie at some point in the near future.
All right, so we have the group that goes off to meet the group in Ohio.
Yes, let's talk about it. There's some huge shit here.
And so we have Eugene, Siddick, you had Michonne.
Michonne, Magna, Yumiko.
Yeah. And, you know, they're off, and they make camp, and you have Pervy Eugene watching.
Yeah. Magna and Yumiko are making out in the thing. They're a couple, and it's not really anything. I mean, that's one thing I will say, Brando. We don't talk about this enough, but I absolutely love the completely, it doesn't fucking matter who you love in this, of the Walking Dead comic book.
Yeah.
It's not, oh my god, that chick is with a chick. It's just like, hey, that's just the way that's how it is. It's fucking, just live your lives. How it fucking is, everybody.
Well, you also had a direct conversation with Jesus and Rick about that, with Aaron, too.
Yes, and that was interesting because Jesus is like, I'm not going, Rick, sorry. And Rick's like, no, come on, man. He's like, no, Rick, I got something worth fighting for. Rick's like, okay, cool, we'll send Aaron. And he's like, hey, remember that something I said I was worth fighting for? That's Aaron. He's not going to want to go either.
Yeah, that was funny.
I, I really want to see that dialogue played out on TV. I think that would be a great, great thing to see happen live. Just like the interaction between those characters, those actors, Andrew Lincoln, and I can't think Tom Payne. Tom Payne, yes.
Come on, Jesus. But this is what you do. You've done this so many times.
I don't know Jesus good enough to really give you a proper imitation
fun of voice thing.
Well, yeah, like an imitation. I couldn't think of the word imitation for a hot second, but I found it. So there it is, imitation.
It's funny because even throughout my I saw the show first before I read the comic, and I don't read Rick like Andy Lincoln.
No, me neither.
It's never flowed like that for me. Like, I don't see him going, "You don't trust me, Dwight? Conversation is over." which really, when you think about that, it would make it a lot more funnier. But I've never read him like that, and I don't know why, but it's like I didn't read Negan the way that, you know, Jeffrey Dean Morgan plays him, but after I've seen him play it, I've actually been adding his cadence into some of the stuff that he's been saying.
That's kind of awesome. That happens.
Yeah.
With these guys. But we were talking about this group that goes off to head to Ohio, which we're going to get their next issue, I think. This will be issue 171. Coming up, but this group is out in the wild, Brando. They're just kind of out there in the fields, you know, doing their thing. And we get something we haven't seen in a while, which is a random walker attack.
Yeah, it's easy to forget that the walkers are there. Like, the Andrea death being an actual bite death, I think is significant because everyone's just like, "Oh, this was a zombie show and it was cool, but now it's about the people, and I mean, that's not cool. It should be about the zombies." It's so hard to do a 170-issue book about zombies or a 10-season show about zombies. That it's never been about the zombies as about what keeps the show going. It's the interactions between the characters.
Yeah, historically speaking, zombies have the worst dialogue ever. Brains.
Except for in bad lip reading.
Oh, I've not seen one with zombies in bad lip reading.
You haven't seen the Walking Dead bad lip reading videos?
No, I have not.
Oh my gosh, Nate.
I'm sure they're hilarious.
Yeah.
Damn it.
Because you have like the walkers like trying to reach through the fence of the prison, and they're just going, "Ah," and their mouths are opening all wide, "Ah," and you have them going, "Hey. Hey! Hey!"
That's weird. I need... how many of them did they do?
Of the Bad Liberty?
For Walking Dead, was there just one, or did they do a couple?
There might have been two.
Reason I ask is because didn't they... aren't those the same people that did, like, Seagulls?
Yes.
Yeah. Those guys are really talented, honestly.
Unbelievably.
So the walker attack happens to the group, and Siddick almost gets it. I mean, that was close. And I was like, "Whoa!" But Eugene saves the day, Brando, and I'm setting this up. I need to get your thoughts. There's an interaction. It's the big reveal we've been waiting for a long, long time. Who, in fact, is the daddy of Rosita's unborn undead baby?
Dun dun dun.
Brando, I gotta know, what did you think about that? I mean, I didn't even think about that as being what the final page was gonna be.
I didn't either, because I forgot about it.
Yeah, it was such a subtle... I mean, they've teased it a little bit when they have brought up Rosita through Eugene's dialogue and stuff, but they've not fully committed to, like, this is what the fuck is going on. But they finally did, and it is revealed that Siddick was in love with Rosita, who was with Eugene, who just saved Siddick's life.
Yeah, and Siddick was very guilty.
Yeah. Oh, you just sent me that.
He was feeling it. Yeah, dude, I figured I would just, like, while I was thinking about it, I'll just send you these. Yeah, so they did three. They've did, there's part one and part two of this, of the more Walking and Talking Dead.
Sweet.
I haven't watched these in forever. I remember there's this whole thing with the governor that cracked me up in one of those where he's like, it's the one where, like, Rick and the governor are meeting in that one building and they're sitting at the table.
Yeah.
And then Rick and the governor's like going like he gets into this song thing that he's doing and he's like tapping on the, like, on the table. And I just remember the governor going beep ba beep ba boom, ba beep ba beep ba boom, beep ba beep ba boom, ba beep ba beep ba boom. And that's what it's like on Broadway. So the group that's going to Ohio, they end up going into a city, right? They get to a city, and they're like, you know, when the series first started, the cities were really densely populated. Of course, the government had everybody go to the cities. Because they said it would be safer, but really that just corralled everybody there. So when people started turning, there was all the food. Then they turned, and then it was like, you know, rats breeding like crazy. But they're like, you know, they've probably spread out since then, but we still should be pretty careful. And they're going in, and that's when the revelation is like, we're alone. This place is empty.
Yeah, that was kind of a crazy thing, and again, I'm not trying to drive home, folks, that we're going to be talking deeper about the first six issues of The Walking Dead later, but, like, when you go to Atlanta in the beginning, and it's so heavily populated, we haven't really been to a city since Atlanta. I mean, we went to D.C. kinda, and it wasn't really populated, because obviously they had safe zones that were planned for your governors and stuff, and your politicians and whatnot. So this is the first time they're really getting into the city. And it's just like silence. There's not even a single anything. And that would be, to me, like, you know, it's weird because you think about, like, how your brain would happen to, like, what your brain would become in the zombie apocalypse. And I think no noise at all would be way more terrifying.
Well, yeah, because you would be so used to the noise by that point.
Exactly. I don't know if that's zombie speak or whatever, but I tried. Yeah.
Can you imagine a full zombie podcast?
Just like. I always thought it would be hilarious if zombies were totally unintelligible, but, like, clearly, concisely, and with great vigor could say brains, you know? Like,
brains.
How funny would that be? Like, if you were, like, in the zombie apocalypse and you heard all this, like, dark, evil mumbling, and then you almost heard, like, jazzily, like, brains! You know? Like, I would fucking run. That's all I know. I would run for cover and hide in a bush. Like, that is what would happen. Like, this is me diving in a bush.
This is me diving in a bush.
Oh, shit, folks. We we are on the slap happy Slappington hour because it's late for Brando. It's kind of late for me, but I love recording deep into the evening. Brando, when we get into the city here with the group, this is where everything really happened, and we kind of fast-tracked it, but, like, Siddick starts to have this really manic breakdown, and it's like the oncoming storm. He can feel himself realizing all the terrible shit he's done and how he did terrible shit to a person who just saved his fucking life.
How could you, Siddick? You losing your mind in the city, Siddick.
You got some splaining to do. I don't know why I went to I Love Lucy, but that's where my brain went right now.
So, have they always written Eugene the like the way they write him in the show?
No. He definitely is becoming more Josh McDermott-y. He's definitely more creepy now than he was before. He was just awkward up and until he debuted on the show in, what was that, mid to end season 5, mid-season?
That was season 4. That was right after the Governor's Battle. That was one of the episodes
that's
back
right.
from the mid-season.
That's right. That was the Herschel-ish episode.
Yeah.
Yeah, that they showed up at the end there. So, I mean, ever since then...
It wasn't the very end of that episode. It was the end of, like... They showed up at the end of one of the episodes after that because it was all about... They came across Glenn.
And that's right.
And at the end of the Herschel episode, we didn't know where Glenn was.
That's right. Yeah. It's been a while, Brando.
Or did they show up... They showed up on... They didn't show up on Glenn. They showed up on... Or did they? God dang it. I can't remember who... If it was Glenn or Maggie that they showed up on first.
On the bridge?
Well, because they did because they reenacted, like, the cover, like, one of the books, where, like, they were standing almost exactly how they stood, like in the books.
Issue 53 of The Walking Dead, the first issue of Abraham.
Yeah.
There, see, you actually got a comic fact today, folks.
Whoa!
I still got it. I still fucking got it, Brando. I can sling comic facts for days if I need to. Unfortunately for me, I'm just really super busy, so reading comics is not simple.
You know what? Same with me and playing video games at this point.
Yeah, man. You know what? It's crazy, though, because your love for video games isn't just necessarily about playing them. You know, the tag in Game Addicts podcast is a podcast about modern retro video games we play and collect. And I think that you get to still enjoy talking about games through your collecting, even though I know that's slowed down, too.
Quite so.
Yeah, man. But is there anything, well, you know, anything else you want to add on this episode of Journey into Comics before we get into that other thing that we're doing? We should tell people about that probably, maybe.
Yeah, so we just sat here and we discussed the last two issues of The Walking Dead. Now, we used to do a show... we've done a few episodes of that. It was called Comic Club, where we take a book, like a big story arc or whatever. Like we did the Secret Wars, we did Batman Hush, and then we did the first half of Watchmen because we had a lot of technical issues. Well, we never really got back to it. We had problems with scheduling, and we just got kind of wrapped up into just doing the show and doing some other things and doing live shows and launching a network eventually. And we want to bring that back. So that's one of the things that we thought about bringing back for Patreon. Well. With Patreon, for $1, you get early access, where you get all of our shows up to a week early when and where available. For $1, you know, just helping us out, man, and helping us like pay for the hosting or whatever. But then, you know, like what we thought about, well, we have that. Is there anything more, like a bonus show? Like, well, Comic Club came to mind immediately, and that we could bring that back. And for $3, you get bonus shows. And that is not limited to just one show a month, but you're guaranteed one a month. And there might even be some bonus content from some of our other shows here on the network as well. So what we decided to do for the first one is to bring back the Comic Club book review, and we are going to look at, you know, the first 6 issues of The Walking Dead, the active book that we really take a look at on every issue that comes out. Eventually, we usually get to it. Eventually, especially if we miss a few months, But, you know, being the name Journey into Comics, where, you know, you'd think that we would be reviewing books every week, we try to do that, and we end up just falling off eventually. And, you know, we talked about wanting to review issues every episode, and we did that for a little bit. But then, again, time just catches up with us, where we were like, man, I forgot to read anything this week. Yeah, me too. All right, we won't do it. And then we end up forgetting to do it from there on.
Yeah, man, but that, there's nothing wrong with that, because we can always jump back into it.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say that there's another podcast I do, Brando, called the Voice of Survival Podcast.
Yes.
Cheap Pop. Episode 2 just came out. I hope people are enjoying it. It was a very full circle episode, as I talk about in that episode. But all I wanted to say is I was trying to tell my guest that what my plan is, and I want to tell everybody here my plan, because it's something that I think our listeners will really appreciate. I'm going to bring back the Inception cast, the Incepticast that Josh and I did on an episode of Josh Figures It Out, which was actually the first episode of Journey into Comics, and then I was interviewed, and Josh had his first part of the episode as his show. I'm going to do a show about that show and then play that show within my show. And that's going to also at some point be exclusive to the $3 Patreon tier. As a retrospective, it started it all. It really did kick off my love for this thing. But just to let people know that Patreon is something we're really excited to utilize moving forward.
Totally.
Yeah, so I think that does it for this week, Brando. We've let people know that they can go to our Patreon. It's patreon.com/journeyintocomics. You can give us a dollar, get early access to the network, get all 8 shows. That includes Game Addicts Podcast, that includes Journey into Comics, Journey into Wrestling, Foodies Watching Movies, The Voice of Survival Podcast, Podcastrophe, The Poor Rapport, and Butt Stuff. Plus, there's new shows coming down the pipe soon, I promise. We are always in development, trying to work on new things. You can get us on all our different social media sites, on Facebook at facebook.com/Journey into Comics Podcast, on Twitter at JIC Network, on Instagram at Journey into Comics, on YouTube at Journey into Comics. You can get us on Stitcher, Podbean, Google Play, iTunes, all your podcast services. Brando, I want to mention one thing. Real quick before we go here, our listeners should definitely check out the Podbean app. And I didn't tell you this before we started rolling. But do you know why?
Why is that, dude?
They are, as far as I know, the only podcast service that offers increased volume as an option.
Yes.
Where
okay,
they
yes.
do a massive volume boost. And I love it. There is a small, tiny little downside I'll also talk about for a second. And that tiny downside is that, if there's a silence, it lifts the white noise up. So if you didn't completely cut your silence, your white noise sounds like an ocean coming in. So every episode sounds like it's oceanside, which maybe that's nice. Maybe now all of our Journey into Comics Network episodes are by the pool and by the ocean. But I started, really using that app more when I drive. Like, the Podbean app is great for driving. It cranks it up if you don't have a system that your car can hook your phone to and allow you to hear it through your car's sound system.
Also, just a heads up, guys. I actually went into some of our settings and tried to tweak some stuff around. And it turns out that through the iTunes app and through our RSS feed, we were limited to only, like, what, 20 episodes going up on some services at any given time. Well, I did some research, and iTunes max is 300. So I upped it to 300. So go ahead and, you know, subscribe if you haven't, because now you can get all of our episodes in one spot on all the apps. And then, of course, if you've been following us for a while, maybe you didn't join us in the beginning, and you're like, man, I'm not really into going to the website or anything like that. Now just, you know, refresh us, and you're going to get us from all the way from episode 1, which is absolutely crazy. And it's something that I wanted to do because, you know, we have a lot of long-running jokes we've done here on the show. We have a lot of, like, things that we tried in the past, you know, that have led us to where we are now.
I think that's one thing, Brando. We have never settled on, that's good enough. We always want to innovate. We always want to keep growing and changing and evolving what we do. It is so bizarre to me that we are 154 issues deep of this show, or 154 episodes deep of this show, and now there are tendrils to this show that are other shows. And then it's like, I feel like in the course of all this, those shows are going to spawn other shows that'll end up on this network. And then it's bizarre to me that where this all started, I'm feeling very reflective again for a second, folks. I feel so fucking bad that I keep being in this reflective state. But I just think about it, and God damn it, Brando, if it wasn't for you, none of this would be even close to possible. And I think that we have never dreamed too big for this show. And if we set a goal for ourselves, we always knock it out of the park. And I think that's indicative of who we are as people, who we are as partners and teammates. And I'm just looking forward to whatever's next. So now that I've been done reflecting, is there anything else you'd like to add, Brando?
To the future and beyond, we are still going to grow. We are still going to try and stretch this as far as we can take it for as long as we can. And we hope to have you along for the ride with us.
Absolutely, guys. Well, if that's going to do it this week of Journey into Comics, it is, in fact, episode 154. Next week, we're at 155. We're probably going to close on Game of Thrones next week, talk about that finale. It might get covered on another show. The entire season might get covered on another show. That's a spoiler for you. If that's going to do it for this week of 154 Journey into Comics, I'm Nate.
I'm Brando.
We loved talking with you guys. We'll check you later. Keep filling your brains with shit.
Are you sitting down? Good. Because this is a special report. The Journey into Comics Network is proud to present The Poor Report, your one-stop shop for everything news and topics of personal interest. Tune in every other Tuesday for exciting new episodes. And now, back to your regularly scheduled podcast.